You're listening to Maine Public's Political Pulse. I'm Ari Snyder, joined by Maine Public's chief political correspondent Steve Missler and State House correspondent Kevin Miller. This week, a Senate committee advanced one of President Trump's most controversial cabinet picks, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., to the Department of Health and Human Services. Steve, that sets up a potential confirmation vote by the full U.S. Senate next week. Kennedy has pushed vaccine misinformation for years. So what does this mean for the future of public health?
Well, that's an important question, Ari, and I'm not sure what to expect if Kennedy gets the final nod from the Senate as soon as potentially next week. I mean, he has scant medical or public health credentials, and as you noted, he's been peddling anti-vaccine rhetoric for years. He has not backed away from his long debunked claim that childhood vaccines cause autism. During COVID, his nonprofit, Children's Health Defense, pushed a lot of misinformation about the COVID vaccine. Now, Kennedy has described it as this plot by elites to prolong the pandemic. Have a listen to this clip from a podcast he hosted alongside an internist in Ellsworth, Merrill Nass.
The plan of Fauci, of Gates, of Farrar is to lengthen this pandemic, to intensify it, to make it lethal, so that people are terrified and they will take those vaccines and they won't take any other medicine. So putting all of the other medicines that could have stopped this pandemic, that could have saved the lives of 500,000 Americans who unnecessarily died.
And that's just a flavor of Kennedy's comments about the COVID vaccine. But what's interesting is how that kind of rhetoric has been seeded in Maine. I mentioned that he was talking to an internist in Ellsworth in that clip. And that same doctor is affiliated with Children's Health Defense. She's testified in public hearings on vaccine bills in the legislature. And she even briefed state lawmakers on vaccines in 2021 and admitted that she lied to a pharmacist to obtain hydroxychloroquine to treat a COVID patient. That's not an approved treatment, and its efficacy has been largely disproven. And the study touting its purported benefits was retracted late last year. That same doctor recently co-signed a letter backing Kennedy's confirmation, and the Associated Press found that many of the doctor signatories on that letter had their licenses suspended, revoked, or they were sanctioned in some other way. And that letter was designed to counter what is essentially a plea from doctors, public health officials across the country, not to confirm him. And after all, HHS oversees vaccine research, development, and approval. And the fear is that work will either come to an end or will be thwarted in some way.
And Steve, do we know how Republican Senator Susan Collins is going to vote on Kennedy's nomination?
No, not yet. She had a chance to question Kennedy during a separate confirmation hearing. And I think a lot of people were looking there to see, you know, if there were any clues to how she would land on Kennedy. You know, she asked him about vaccines and declining confidence in them among the American public, but she didn't really press him when he told her that a lack of confidence in vaccines stems from a lack of confidence in government. He didn't take any responsibility for his own role in that declining confidence.
In another high-profile nomination fight, Maine Senator Susan Collins supported Trump's nominee to head the Office of Management and Budget, Russell Vought. That's despite Vought's clearly stated opposition to Congress controlling federal spending. So, Kevin, why would Collins, as head of the Senate Appropriations Committee, support this view?
Well, Collins is making clear that she doesn't support Russell Vought and Trump's view that the president and not Congress should have more control over the purse strings. That power rests entirely with Congress right now, and specifically with the House and the Senate Appropriations Committees, which and Senator Collins is the chair of the Senate Appropriations Committee. So she's making clear she still thinks Congress should control the power of the purse, as they say. But she says that she voted for Vought because he was qualified, and that is her biggest determination when she's looking at any president's nominees for a cabinet position, whether they're a Democrat or a Republican. She pointed out that he previously served as both director and deputy director of the Office of Management and Budget under Trump's previous term. And, you know, basically when she's looking at these cabinet nominees, that those qualifications are the big things that she looks at. What's interesting is kind of what happens now. Mr. Vought has made clear that both he and President Trump, you know, think the president should have more power over spending. It seems like they're likely to challenge it. And what Senator Collins has said is if that happens, she thinks it will end up in the courts, and she hopes that the courts side with Congress on this fight.
Meanwhile, Democrats are honing their attacks on Elon Musk. Jared Golden jumped into the fray this week, even though he has typically refrained from strong criticisms of the Trump administration. Steve, what is he saying?
Yeah, Golden took a different tack from other Democrats in criticizing Musk. The 2nd District Congressman was basically trying to prod Trump's ego by suggesting that Musk was stepping on his toes and pursuing his own agenda. He called Musk an unelected weirdo billionaire, which generated a lot of attention, of course. But it's interesting, Ari, because as you mentioned, Golden has generally steered clear of criticizing Trump. You know, he declined to comment on his pardoning of the January 6th rioters and even chided reporters for asking about it. And he made a big show of supporting the president's now suspended tariff gambit with Canada and Mexico. So another way to read this is that Musk is just becoming deeply unpopular, more so than Trump. So if you're a Democrat under pressure to speak out against some of these actions taken by the Trump administration, but really don't want to upset your 2nd District constituents, Musk is an easier target than the president.
And at the state level, an anti-Trump protest in Augusta highlighted some internal division on the left over how best to push back on this deluge of executive actions we've seen coming from the White House. Kevin, what happened and what does it tell us about the state of the Democratic Party?
Yeah, so Democrats are still very much trying to figure out the best way to respond to everything that's coming from the Trump administration, really at breakneck speed. Wednesday's protests, I'd say, showed how much that internal struggle is very much happening here in Maine. This wasn't the largest protest we've seen in Maine during the Trump era, but a few hundred people turned out and they were pretty energized. What made the turnout even more noteworthy, I'd say, is the lack of any official involvement by the Democratic Party or Democratic leaders in the state. So this was really kind of a grassroots protest. But that's not how it started. So the Kennebec County Democratic Committee had obtained a permit to hold the event, but then the committee abruptly canceled it because they said that, quote, bad actors had infiltrated it and were planning to spread hate and cause all kinds of turmoil. So other activists stepped in, got a permit, and pushed ahead, and there were no major issues. During the protest, we talked to the organizer, Nicholas Jackson, and here's a little bit of what he had to say when we asked about everything that happened with the local party.
When the Democrats pulled out, it said two things. One is that they are currently too afraid to actually stand up for this. And two is that they don't even know what's really going on around them.
Like I said, this debate is happening on the national level. There are more protests that are being talked about and planned here in Maine. So I guess that'll be another interesting thing to see how many people show up for them and whether that momentum is continued in some way.
That was Maine Public's chief political correspondent, Steve Missler, and State House correspondent, Kevin Miller. Thanks for joining us for Maine's Political Pulse. You can also read the Political Pulse newsletter. Find it online at mainepublic.org/pulse. Our music is by Rob Holt. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again soon on Maine's Political Pulse.